everybody, and welcome to season two of the Gosh Daniel podcast. We've taken a 3 or 4 week break, would you say? I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, it's been quite the break.
I was enjoying life. I apologize.
Yeah. Yep.
We didn't really say that we'd be gone, but then again, nothing particularly good or worth reviewing has come out. And I'm...
Well, besides, you know, recent events.
Well, yeah, like, besides what we're going to be reviewing today.
yeah.
You know, I'm all right ignoring Transformers. I think it...
yep.
I don't know. I think it deserves a little bit of shunning just from what I've heard about it.
So, yeah.
I don't know. Wasn't worth me spending the $2 I have to go see that.
The $2, yeah.
I'm broke. The $2 a month, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, $2
the $2 a month from our patrons.
Oh, it's nice to know that you're getting the money, yes.
Yes. However, PayPal and Patreon have conspired to take away our money. So, you know, we really, they have the such fees that they take about 49 cents of the $2,
which That's hurts. That's a lot of money for us.
I know. 49 cents of the $2 every month are gone. I get basically $1.51 per month.
Shouldn't it be a percentage, though, instead of, you know, like a set amount of cents?
So sad. I would think so. But no. It's just mean. It really is just mean. Because it's
like... see the $2.
I live on these $2. You know?
Oh, wow.
I'm really living paycheck to paycheck here. Yeah. And I don't appreciate Patreon taking all my money. Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. But, well, we should probably get to reviewing the things.
So we are going to be reviewing two episodes today to kick off season two. And
wow.
Yeah, that was not planned at all, I promise.
Wow.
but we want to talk about two movies we actually like. And two movies that have come out recently. We know it's a bit late, but we're going to review Baby Driver. It came out like a few weeks ago, but it was it was just really good. And
yeah,
I want to talk about it. And yeah, we'll get into that a bit later. But first, we're going to review Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes.
Which most people have been anticipating for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Did not look forward to it after seeing Civil War. But I have to admit, was not as bad as I was expecting. So, I guess let's just get into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I guess we're going to try some new things with the rating systems that we have on the podcast. I think we'll be wanting to discuss the plot, the character development, slash just, you know, characters in general. And overall, like, quality filmmaking in terms of, like, the shots, the sound editing, mixing and sort of, you know, that sort of thing, along with, like, soundtrack stuff. And so those are sort of three categories, and I guess we'll talk about each of those for each of the movies and then give a rating for each of those individual things and then give an overall rating. So, yeah, without further ado, Daniel, what did you think of the... plot of Spider-Man Homecoming?
Okay, so I watched this one video by a filmmaker person that I really liked, and it was like the problem with superhero movies, I guess. And it talked about, you know, the stakes and how always in these huge action budget, you know, films, like there's the stakes are always at the highest point where it's like you have to save the entire planet. Yet they spend so much time focusing on the overall stakes that they don't spend time focusing on, like, individual kind of, like, characters that you can care about to act, you know, that would actually, you'd actually care about as you're watching the movie, and you'd hope that, you know, it would work out in the end. So, so I feel like that's Spider-Man Homecoming really actually, you know, kind of, it didn't fall into that trap that a lot of these, you know, big budget superhero films do have. And so, like, with the individual characters, you kind of, like, each character, I know, like, a lot of the roles were smaller, but you know, the stakes were a little bit lower, which allowed for the characters to shine more, I guess. I don't know if that makes any sense. But, and so I think that worked really well for it. And they totally got the whole, like, theme, like, the whole vibe, I think, of, you know, I guess Spider-Man in a sense. Which I liked, you know, the whole, you know, high school and all that stuff, which I've heard a bunch of people say, so it doesn't sound, it's not like a two different way of reviewing it, but, yeah, so, I really liked how it, I mean, it wasn't, okay, so it wasn't necessarily a plot that we haven't seen before, or a plot that we haven't, you know, like, that is, like, super crazy or, you know, different, but it at the same time, it still wasn't so, like, predictable in a sense. Kind of like how in our, well, and when I reviewed Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and we compared it with number 1, and how number 2, you could just predict how the movie would end instantly, and the plot was still kind of predictable, and, like, you know, nothing really different. But opposed from Guardians of the Galaxy 1, where the plot was, it was, you know, not really different, but yet you couldn't predict what would happen, kind of, you know, maybe like not a quarter, but 50% or 75% way to the end of the movie, you know? So I did like that, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming had a little bit of a sense of unpredictability. However, I did, are we going to be going into spoilers? Or I think we should.
We can, yeah. I guess it makes sense, okay, too.
It's been out for a few days. I have to say, I did predict the big kind of twist, and spoiler here was that Liz, what, Allen was her last name or something, was the daughter of the Vulture.
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. And so I did predict that, like, I had an kind of a thought, like, in the back of my head before I went to go see the movie, and the moment he walked up to the house to pick her up for homecoming, and he rang on the doorbell, I'm like, oh yeah, this is how they're gonna introduce it, and it's gonna be like this kind of awkward, kind of comical, but kind of shocking situation. And exactly, that's what happened.
Oh, I didn't
happened.
Predict
and,
it at all.
Yeah? No, you didn't?
I didn't want to. Like, I thought, I was just so happy with how the movie was going, I just didn't want to, like, I didn't want, I don't know. That's probably just an excuse. Yeah. But, like, I was pleased with that, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us more about your thoughts, though, of the plot.
I guess I did really enjoy... I guess I didn't think about it before, though. Yeah, but the stakes weren't actually really that high. Which is a good thing. Especially for it being sort of a spin-off. I guess this sort of movie that doesn't revolve directly around the Avengers and isn't a plot that evolves directly around the Avengers, that's like a smaller scale, those movies always appeal to me more.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Marvel Cinematic movies. Well, yeah. The Marvel Cinematic movies. That just sounds dumb.
Yeah.
Anyways.
No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but of the Marvel Studios movies, I guess the ones with the smaller scale are usually more interesting to me, or just, like, that have something different. And I felt like what this movie did was actually surprisingly different for still having reasonable connections to the rest of the Marvel Universe, which I did like, because I felt like Doctor Strange almost should have had, I didn't really want it to, but it could have had more sort of, you know, the rest of the Marvel Universe involvement than it did. Because it was in the same, like, it was on the same planet, and it was like this giant, like, big scale thing, and, like, there wasn't anything going on. And whereas I did just really enjoy how they didn't, like, overdo the connections, like with Iron Man and Captain America and stuff like that. I felt like they didn't give too much. They just gave enough to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it remained a center part of the plot, but without being, like, annoying and, like, yes, we know Iron Man is very popular. Robert Downey Jr. makes a lot of money. We understand this. I didn't feel like it was too much of that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I liked the twist with him being Liz's dad, the Vulture. I actually thought that really worked well. And I liked the car chat.
That was so awesome.
It was really funny. I liked
that
it.
That was probably one of like a highlight scene from that movie. That was just
It was really well done. I liked how the dialogue was written. Totally, and acted.
Yeah.
Let's see. I guess I did enjoy that they made it more convincing in terms of the high school part of the plot.
Yeah.
Because as much as I really, really loved the first Amazing Spider-Man, the first one with Andrew Garfield, I didn't really like the second one at all. But the first one I really, really liked and was one of my favorite movies when it came out. As much as I liked that movie, it was not very... didn't really feel like a high school, and they didn't really act like high school students. And it seemed just really, really sort of dumb. I mean, when that movie came out, I wasn't in high school. And I'd never been in high school, so I guess I didn't really get it then anyways. But, yeah, he didn't really pass off as a high school student, and nothing really seemed to matter. So.
Yeah, and that was, like, a huge part in the earlier comics with, you know, Spider-Man, and that kind of enhances popularity almost about how it totally showed the contrast between him and being just a normal high school student and also a superhero. So them having highlighted that a lot more in this movie than they had in the other movies kind of made me appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. On top of that, I really liked the sort of extra layer that it added to the plot with having his friend involved, knowing that he was Spider-Man and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his friend's name, but
Ned, I think.
Ned. That was a cool, I guess it felt like it really changed things up from the other movies, and I think it changed it for the better, in terms of, like, I guess the different things that they'd have to do, like, to sort of work with this character, I think helped the movie.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, I think it had, I guess more in the plot department, it had more, of the makings of a good Spider-Man movie than the other ones. I think than any of the other ones, so.
Okay, yeah. I get that, yeah. But with, I don't know, I can't remember if it was a post-credit scene, no, it was a mid-credit scene, or it was just at the end of the movie, where, also Aunt May finds out about Peter Parker being Spider-Man, like that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, that was good. I think that was just at the end of the movie. I don't think that was in a credit scene.
Yeah. That was so funny.
Mm-hmm. It was...
Because I was thinking about that. I'm like, well, when do you think they're going to introduce... like, not introduce, but when are they going to do that? When do you kind of pull the plug on that? Not pull the plug, but more like actually make it happen. Because I feel like in the first Spider-Man trilogy... The Aunt May kind of knew, but it was never a thing that they spoke. Was it? I can't remember. It's been a while. All I remember is that she kind of like had hints towards it, but she'd never actually confront him that about it or something like that. So, and then of course, I don't think the Amazing Spider-Man ever got to that point. I think she knew, like, the Aunt May from The Amazing Spider-Man. It was also one of those things where she had a bunch of hints, you know, and kind of put the pieces together, but never actually, you know, made it up like, a public thing to them, that they both kind of had this, you know, thing where he knew. It was clear. It was never fully, like, 100% clear, but, you know, you kind of got the sense that they both knew.
Yeah. I mean, if the Vulture could put the pieces together in, like, 2 seconds in the car, then I'm pretty sure Aunt May should be able to figure it out, so.
Yeah, and considering she saw him, like, I wonder how that'll happen, like, how that'll work with the sequels and stuff, and what'll happen, and if she'll be, like, too overbearing or overprotective, or will she be like, okay, we gotta kind of work with this, you know, so I don't know. I'm excited to see how it's gonna play out. But did you see any of the other end credit scenes, though?
Yeah, I sat through all of them.
Yeah.
I don't remember the mid-credit scene, but I remember the end-credit scene because it was particularly memorable. But
it was epic. That was pretty great. Captain America was so stinking funny.
It was just really, really meta. And
yeah,
I like that. Yeah. If it's not Star Wars. Because that's why Phil Lord and Chris Miller got fired from the Han Solo movies, that they were trying to make Han Solo like a really meta character.
Wait, really? And it just,
yeah, like they from what I heard, there was like a lot of just like really meta things that they had been trying to like work into that movie that they didn't think worked, and then like just sort of things that weren't like really true to the character. But yeah, as long as it's not Star Wars, I like meta.
Okay, I did not know. I mean, I knew they got fired, but I didn't actually get to hear the reasons why. I just heard that they wanted to take it in a new direction or whatever.
They were taking it in the direction they took the Lego movie and 21 Jump Street and all of their other movies. And they were sort of, from what I understand, pissed off at the fact that that they were, you know, not given as much control as they were with their other projects. But, I mean, if you're making a movie about, like, Legos and that's all you have to do, or you're making your own sort of comedy, I can understand why you'd have a little bit less control than over when you're making a movie for the biggest movie franchise ever made.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's and maybe that's just me. And
we're back to Star Wars somehow.
Sorry, yeah. I just had to. I mean, it's season it's two. All right. We got to start it off with the same old habits because things never change. And everybody needs to realize this. Nothing changes and it all stays the same. And there's really no point.
All right, sounds good. Back to Star... I'm not Star Wars. Back to
yes,
Spider-Man,
yes, back to
though.
Star Wars.
So, the mid-credit scene, however, all right? Did you... Okay, so you said you didn't remember it. But basically what it was the Vulture was walking in prison through the halls with guards and stuff. And there was, like, a line of a line of other prisoners coming, and he stopped and saw one, and they were talking. It was a dude from earlier in the film, one of his henchmen, I think, or something like that. And they started talking. He's like, hey, I'm gonna kill that that spider dude. And he's like, hey, you know his identity? And he, like, and Vulture was like, if I knew his identity, he'd already be dead, or something like that. And so, yeah, and the dude had a scorpion tattoo on his neck, and so everyone's like, he's the scorpion. That's so cool.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah,
I somehow missed the tattoo, but I caught the rest of it. All right.
Yeah, I missed the tattoo, too. I had to watch a couple videos and stuff and read some stuff to, you know, catch it or see it. So, yeah, and so I thought it was very interesting that the Vulture, you know, kind of had, almost had his back, like, had Peter Parker's back, in a sense.
But that's the same exact thing that happened in, like, the end credit scene of The Amazing Spider-Man, if you remember that. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. Where it was, like, the hat in the dark?
Yeah, and he was talking about, you know, he's gonna try to kill Peter Parker. And then the Lizard is in jail with him, and he's like, you stay away from Peter, he's a good boy, or something dumb like that. And then the next movie, that's the villain, and... It's just that's what happens every time.
Yeah, however,
it's like a Sony Spider-Man trope or something. I don't know.
I don't think their motivations were the same, though. I mean, like...
They're both trying to, like, sort of protect him, though.
It's
the villain from that movie, like, somehow managing to protect the other one, him from the other villain while in jail. As the end credit scene. I think it was
almost like a, I'm gonna take care of him myself type thing, instead of a, I'm protecting him because I've known him for a while and I knew his parents and, you know, I wanna make sure he, even though I made a mistake and I, you know, I wanna make sure he's still gonna be okay, I guess. It's more of a, I'm gonna get him myself and I'm not gonna try to involve anyone else. This is just a me thing and I'm not gonna, like, want to actually, you know, ruin this kid's life. I just want to kill him. But anyways,
yeah, I guess that's a possibility. I just figured because he was like, you know, I'll save your life because you saved my daughter's life, I figured after he saved his life then he was pretty much even. But that's how I took it.
Yeah,
so I took
that's
he was all right with him. I mean, he already basically destroyed his, you know, company, but he also saved his life. So
That's true.
I would have been fine with it. Or I mean, guess I thought he would have been fine with it, so. But okay. Maybe that's just me.
Okay, so we should probably, we kind of talked about, well, we
so we talked about the plot,
I think, right?
Yeah. And what would you rate the plot out of 18?
So only because, you know, it didn't have the crazy high stakes and the, you know, that kind of trope. And I liked the way, you know, it flowed, and it was kind of like, you know, we kind of got the whole spoiler from the trailer about the big mistake and, you know, kind of having to redeem himself and learn. Like, I liked that, and, like, it carried out pretty well. So I give it, out of 18, I'd give the plot, like, I don't know. I have to get used to rating out of this weird number. Like, maybe a 17... Yeah, maybe a 17 or a 16 and a half.
Yeah. I think I'd give it a 16, just because if 18 is not only, like, you know, this is passable and this is, like, what movies should try to be, but, like, this is the best plot I've ever seen in a movie, if that's what is 18 out of 18, I'll give it, like, a 16 just because it's, like, it's a good plot and it was delivered well and it was interesting, but at the same time, it wasn't that great. It didn't
exactly do anything new.
I mean, a lot of that could just be because the trailer sort of spoiled it, which made it less interesting.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it still just remains 16. And thanks, Sony, for ruining the trailer. So.
I know, with their marketing.
Stupid Sony.
Yeah, all right. So I guess we can settle for, like, 16. You 16 and me 16 and a half, then.
All right, cool.
Okay, well...
Do you want to talk about character? Characters.
Okay. Yeah, you can go first this time.
All right. I just thought they were unique in terms. I guess most of my review is sort of comparing it to the previous ones, but
I mean, that's kind of all you can do, right?
Yeah. I thought they were unique and well done. I really, really like Ned, and from the trailers, I thought he'd be super annoying, but I think they use different shots. Or different takes, at least, of the scenes that they had in the trailers. So it didn't feel that annoying. I think the delivery was different in some of those scenes than it was in the trailer. Which was an improvement for me. And I definitely liked that. And I thought Ned was actually a good character and a great addition to the movie, as already stated, I guess. But I think, overall it was really... He was a really good character. I liked MJ. I think she was good. Even though... I also thought she would be annoying from the trailers.
Yeah.
Basically, Sony made me think this movie was going to stink, and then Disney proved that it was good, so.
Yeah, Sony was kind of that was, like, the marketing, really, was the only thing that Sony had full reign over, I guess.
And they stunk it up.
To, like, creative control, yeah, and they made it, like, kind of horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, real quick about the marketing, yeah, because some of the scenes, like, I thought we're going to be, like, these drawn-out kind of comedy bits that were going to be, like, okay, we kind of know what's coming here. But they kind of went through really fast, and we're like, oh, okay, that kind of went natural. That wasn't too, like, oh, we have to stop here to just soak up this moment of funniness, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah, that's what normally annoys me about Marvel movies. Would happen. So, yeah, I'm glad they didn't do it as much. And this one,
yeah,
I think it was good.
I
thought that Tom Holland was a much more convincing Spider-Man. He was a much more convincing... I guess I should say he's a much more convincing high school Peter Parker. I guess I probably talked about that a little bit, too, when I was talking about the plot. But I think he... Well, I mean, he really passes off as a 15-year-old, I think. And he did a good job. I really think he did a good job. And I think his character was... I guess I wouldn't say that his character was developed well, because it all made sense up until the end. And that choice, like, I guess I understand for his character how he would have, like, sort of changed to that point.
Wait,
but it didn't seem to make sense.
Can you, like, describe the situation?
So at the very end, Tony Stark is like, here, you have a new suit, it's amazing, and we're going to announce that you're part of the Avengers, and everybody's behind that door. And it's a briefing room, and everybody, all of the press is there, ready for you to join the Avengers and stuff like that. And he's like, I want to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and I don't want the new suit, and I don't want to be part of the Avengers or anything. And then he just, like... And it was, I mean, it was really anticlimactic, and I sort of didn't like the ending, just because I felt like I understood that he didn't want, like, if he was like, I want to keep going to high school, and I want to keep living with Aunt May, and, like, not ditch my friends, that makes sense for him, I think. But, like, I don't understand why he would just choose to not be part of the Avengers. Because the whole point was that, like, he wasn't really ready. And then he sort of became ready to join the Avengers, and then he proved it. So I felt like he just should have joined the Avengers, at least in a lesser, at the very least, in like a lesser, you know, rank or
I
something.
I mean, I think he kind of did. Like,
I mean, I guess they'll probably call him, right? But it didn't. He wasn't part of the Avengers, and he didn't get his new suit. And he didn't get announced to be part of the Avengers. So he's not, like, an official member of the Avengers.
Yeah.
And that was dumb to me. But I do think, in terms of, like, how his character actually, like, developed, it worked well. It just didn't... Uh-huh. I didn't think the ending worked for him.
Yeah.
But, you know. Hey, also, let me talk about other main characters of the movie. I really thought Gwyneth Paltrow did a great job as Pepper Potts. Yeah, she was definitely one of the major roles, for sure, because she was one of the first names at the end of the credits, even though she was in the movie for 1 minute.
Yes!
It was dumb, but yeah. No, I think it all, like, I think characters developed well.
Uh-huh.
Just, it didn't exactly mesh with the plot as well as it could have. Like, okay, it was a good plot, and there were good character development, but, like, I guess the two didn't really mesh for me.
Okay.
I don't know. How about you?
With characters, yeah, I mean, I thought the characters were good. It was cool, you're right, that he had, like, a kind of a sidekick, kind of, you know, friend on the side to... that knew about everything and could kind of help him out a bit. And it made it seem almost kind of more high school-y and real in that sense. Which I agree was cool. And about everyone else, it was really just kind of Ned, maybe Aunt May a little, and mainly, you know, Peter. But the side characters from the academathon. Why am I forgetting the name of this? The whatever. The smart people.
I'm gonna let you figure it out. They would.
Anyways, yeah, their group basically having kind of everyone in that one club was cool. All the really main side characters. And I agree, though, like I already said, about how I thought a lot of the characters were going to be annoying, but they really didn't, you know, go to that extent where they would just keep on, you know, pushing it too far and making the characters annoying. And so there was a good balance, I thought. And hopefully in the future movies, well, solo Spider-Man, I wouldn't say if I could say solo, but sequels to directly to Homecoming, there would be more involvement from the side characters besides just Ned. And, like, how, MJ kind of, like, revealed that she was MJ in the end. It was like, okay. And,
that
like,
was an interesting choice.
Even she had some, character development, though.
If you think about it. No, it's like, true. She was fun. I liked her character.
Yeah, and so, and it wasn't, like, kind of in a cringy way, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. They could have totally messed it up, but they were careful, and I think they did it good. And with Liz Allen, and how she kind of just, you know, by the end, she drifted apart and she moved away, I guess.
I like he didn't just tell her he was Spider-Man. It's like, see, that fixes it all or something dumb.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you kind of knew she wasn't going to be sticking around necessarily, in that, you know, like, Peter Parker was going to be, you know, his girlfriend. It was Liz Allen forever. At least that was for me, but, you know, I figured by the end of the movie something would happen where she'd, leave or like something like that. So
I didn't care enough to pay attention to it. Once again, yeah. I thought this movie would be bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and so I don't know. There's not much to say because, you know, of the character. I did like Aunt May too. She could have also been annoying. Dang, you're so right though about how, like, literally, I just kind of assumed the characters were gonna be annoying based on how they looked in the trailer, but
yeah,
they were good.
I mean that scene when they're going into the party, and Ned is like, "Do you have the suit?" And you know, Tom Holland like pulls up his like jacket a little bit to show it off, like. That was when I sort of, like, started to be like, no, Ned is awesome. And not as annoying as the trailers. Like, I went into the movie thinking this guy's gonna really annoy me. And I continued thinking that until up about that scene. And then I was like, wait a minute, this is a good character. That scene was just, like, perfect for me. I don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Yeah, so I guess overall, what would you rate characters? Oh, wait, we almost forgot about the villain, who's kind of like
a really important part. Yeah, that's important.
A really important character there. I think that there was Vulture, it was good. It was
just awesome.
Yeah, like, he played the character so well. Like, it's kind of funny that he did Birdman. Mm-hmm. And then he did
Birdman, he did Batman.
Yep. I mean,
he just likes flying, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he was really good. But like, as I mean, he had a good, like, balance, I guess, of he also wasn't annoying. Because, you know, every character was thought to be annoying. Because I was speculating that Liz Allen was going to be the daughter, it's kind of funny that if you think about it, kind of spoiler, but it doesn't really matter because we just blah everything. So in the beginning of the movie, when he's showing his coworker the drawing, that's technically Liz Allen's drawing. So.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Wow. So technically that's a thing.
That's cool. Yeah, I just thought the opening scene, like, with him and them, like, figuring out what to do with all that, like, tech was just... I think it was a really good way to open a movie, because normally you see, like, this is what happened several years ago with, like, some either unrelated character or, like... I don't know, you don't normally see the villain not being a villain at all.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain it, but, like, usually those movies that, like, open with something happening in the past and then it goes, like, however many years later, it's usually, like, I guess I think of, like, The Fifth Element or something like that, where it's really important to, like, understand what happened and stuff like that, but it's not always used for character development, and it's most definitely not used for the character development of the villain.
Yeah.
I thought it was
this was just kind of, like, important context, I guess.
Yeah, it was just a unique way to do it, I think.
Yeah. I agree. It was definitely... It was different. It was different from...
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't necessarily,
I wouldn't have liked,
like,
him as much without that scene, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't... Normally, those scenes are supposed to give you insight on the plot, and in that way, it kind of did, but it was more focused on giving insight on his character.
It did, yeah, and it, like, it explained, like, really interesting plot stuff that, like, I hadn't thought about with the Avengers, that, again, like, made the movie feel, like, smaller scale and more intimate, and, like, more details sort of matter than the Avengers did, or something like that. But it also delivered a lot of, like, yeah, like, really good character development for him, so I liked him.
Yeah. All right, so now I think that we've talked about all the characters. What would you rate characters?
Overall, I think how they handled characters and the character development, I want to give it... I don't know. I can't decide if I want to give it, like, a 17 or, like, a 15. Because...
It's hard, though, because you don't want to rate it in the middle, like, because usually, like, oh, the middle, that's awful, but I don't know.
I guess I'm going to say 17 because I just thought it would be annoying, and it... like, wasn't, and it actually, most of it just worked. I can't think of anything specifically that I didn't think worked in terms of the characters.
Yeah.
So
I guess you're right.
Yeah, 17.
I'll go 16 and a half again, though, just because I guess you could say, I know, I guess you could just say, since you were a little bit more on leaning to the, this movie's probably going to be really bad side, you were more surprised. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
that's true. I guess I wasn't, I mean, I was still expecting them to be kind of annoying and cheesy, which they weren't at all. So that's really nice. So, but you know, I was a little bit more optimistic than you, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, I'll give it a 16 and a half.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
But,
we can go on to quality now. So that's cool.
Oh, yes.
What were some specific things that just popped out at you that you were like, oh my word, quality?
Well, I mean, I thought they did a lot of cool stuff. I mean, obviously, he has to be fully CG, being Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. There's not a very good way to make it not CG. But I think most of the CG worked. Uh-huh. I think there were, like, some scenes that not even scenes that didn't work. It wasn't like Amazing Spider-Man 2 where the whole thing looked bad. It was, there were, like, specific parts of scenes that, like, for half a second, it really looks CG and then it doesn't again.
Okay.
I really like, and I thought it looked realistic-ish, that scene when he's trapped in the, whatever it's called, the Department of something or other.
Oh, yeah, where they took all the weapons and artifacts and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, with all the crates.
Mm-hmm. When he was trapped in there, I thought, like, that looked realistic, like when he's trying to open it, and he's flying around, and he's doing a bunch of different stuff, and he's really bored. I thought a lot of that looked realistic.
Yeah.
A part I didn't think was realistic was, like, right before that scene when he bangs his head. And he's, like, trying to figure out how to use his suit. He, like, shoots off this one web up into the air and, like, doesn't grab it or whatever. And, like, it falls onto the ground. You see it from, like, a side perspective. From, like, you know, like, inside that person's truck. And they're not noticing Spider-Man in the background. That part looked really bad to me for some reason. The web just looked really weird. I don't know why.
Okay. I didn't really pay attention to that too much, so I don't know what, but okay.
Yeah, it was random. It was a random problem, but yeah.
This one web, but no, I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I think a lot of it looked good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually saw the movie with patron Hunt the Bunt Gunter, and he was talking to me about how much he liked the Vulture suit.
Yeah.
Which I do think was... It was a cool design, but it was like...
Uh-huh.
It looked more realistic than Spider-Man did, I think.
Okay.
I mean, in terms of... I guess that... I'm going basically just, like, full-on aesthetics of the movie. But,
uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that looked good and it looked realistic, and that was sort of a highlight of the movie.
Yeah, they didn't stick with the feathers on the suit.
Yeah, they didn't stick with... Exactly. Yeah, they didn't do feathers on the, like, 80-year-old man thing, you know?
Hey, he did wear that coat with, like, the fur-type lining around the neck, so that was funny.
Yeah, that was much better than what he had in the, like, comics and cartoons and stuff like that. I mean, he was, like, the ugliest villain possible.
they definitely made some realistic type improvements, I guess.
Definitely.
Is that it though? Like, no other things that shot out at you? Shot out because you shoot the web.
I guess it's occurring to me now that scene when he crawls and he's like walking on the ceiling in his room. It was a pretty long shot that looked pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Like it, but that's the thing, is that this movie was, I guess in terms of like the filming and like the shots and stuff like that, it didn't seem to pop out. Like, the action wasn't particularly well done. The shots weren't like unique exactly. It didn't really stand out that much. I think it mostly stood out in terms of like writing, plot, acting, characters, that sort of thing, but it didn't really have a particularly good it wasn't particularly good.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, yeah.
I agree with you there. Yeah, I can agree with you there. All right. Well, I mean, what would we rate quality or stuff like that? I mean,
It wasn't bad. It just, it wasn't really good. I give it like a 14. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll do that too. I'll stick with you. I'll do 14.
All right. Overall, what would you give the movie then?
Altogether, I'd probably give it like a higher rating than I actually. I'd probably give it like definitely somewhere between a 16.5 and a 17. Like somewhere around there.
Yeah. I'm actually going to, I just thought of a sec for a bit. I'm going to give it higher than 14 just because I realized that I did actually really enjoy parts of the soundtrack. I liked the Blitzkrieg bop. I thought that was a good addition to the movie.
Oh my word, you're right. They did have some pretty cool songs.
Yeah, I thought that worked. So, I mean, I guess I'll give it another point for that or two. So, yeah, I'll give it like a 15.
I totally blanked on like the music and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it a 15.
They did have a lot of cliche songs that, you know,
yeah, some of them,
a lot of these coming of age movies put in there, which kind of made it a little bit cheesy for me, but I mean, like, I guess it's kind of what they're going for, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah, some of that was crap, and I mean, I guess nothing can really compare to the opening high school scene from Amazing Spider-Man when he goes in and he's listening to The Shins. I don't think you can just compare to that in terms of soundtrack when you had The Shins on your soundtrack. So I'm not gonna say it was amazing, but you know, it was all right, and I'll give points. I'll give it points for the Blitzkrieg pop. So yeah, 15 for that. Overall, I give my score. I guess a 16.
All right. Cool.
Yep. I did really enjoy that movie.
Right?
I guess that's it.
That's been it for the Spider-Man Homecoming review, and now we'd be moving on into Baby Driver.
Baby Driver.
Man, this is gonna be a pretty long episode.
It's gonna be a long episode, but you know. We're just getting back into the podcast seat. The podcast seat. We're just getting back into the podcast seat. Season two.
Baby Driver. I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna let you go first on this one because I know that you really, really liked it. So
I love this movie very much. It's at least in my top 20. If it's not in like my top.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's in my top 10 or 20. I really, really like it. It was one of the most like insane adrenaline rush movies I've ever seen, and it had just an amazing soundtrack. It was just overall just like a really perfect movie. The only problem I felt like that wasn't even really a problem, it was just marketing. The trailers were terrible. But it didn't make me think the movie was going to be bad just because I knew it was Edgar Wright. So I knew the movie would be good.
Yeah.
So I didn't even pay attention to the trailers. I would just, Edgar Wright movie. I have to see that. I tried to ignore the trailers because I knew
literally that's exactly how it was for me. I saw the first trailer and I'm like, this doesn't look particularly good, but I know it's probably going to be pretty good considering it's Edgar Wright. Mm-hmm. So.
I guess on top of that, it wasn't really a comedy like his other movies, I didn't feel like. It was not
really?
It was not nearly as comedic as his other movies were.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that.
And I don't know why some people call it a comedy. Like, I think it was classified as a comedy under something that I saw. And I really think it should just be classified as an action movie. It wasn't that comedic. But I love his directing style. It had just... Yeah, everything was great about it, but... Anyways.
Yeah, yeah. So talk more about the plot, though. What you liked about it.
Alright, so I think... The plot... it just felt like it kept going. Because it made me... Like, exhilarated and tired at the same time. Like I would want... a movie primarily comprised of chase scenes to be, you know? Like, I felt like the plot wasn't just... It went to the conclusion you thought it would go to, and then the movie ended. It felt like the movie went to the conclusion you thought it would go, and then, oh no, something different happened, and then they're still trying to get to that ending that you're expecting, and then like things would happen to like sort of deter them a bit more than you feel like normally happens in a plot. Because, you know, I felt like with Spider-Man Homecoming, you know, it was sort of like it builds up and then, oh no, he does that one thing and he's like sort of in trouble. And so he's sort of sad for a while. And then he, you know, has the third act where he proves it. And that's sort of the end. Whereas I felt like Baby Driver, mm-hmm. that was almost like a smaller part of the story. Like that, I almost feel like that was just like used, that sort of plot style was used in a different way in this movie. In like the first, I would say like the first 2/3 of the movie was almost that plot. Don't you think?
Yeah. Cause actually, it, no, I get what you're saying.
It builds up. He drops out. He's sort of in trouble. He's sad. Then he has this like crazy, what seems like a third act. But that's the thing, is that the third act, like, just kept going and kept going and kept building up and just, like, exploded in your face. And then there was an epilogue that, like, just added more to the ending that I thought was good. So, mm-hmm. I think it was, like, sort of tiring, but in a good way. Okay. I found it hard to stand after watching that movie. I don't know why. Like, it was just... I sat there for so long with, like, so much adrenaline and, like, on the edge of my seat for, like, 2 hours, and then it's done and you get up and then you're just walking and you just really wish you either had your iPod with you or that you were driving a car. I don't know. It was a really good time for me, and I thought that the plot was... just as well executed as the ending of Rogue One.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Rogue One's like one of my favorite movies of all time. And I think Baby Driver's plot was like... the whole movie was about as good as the ending of Rogue One. So, yeah. Okay. Really good. Yeah. I think I'll actually give it an 18 out of 18 in terms of plot, so...
Oh, wow. Yep. All right.
How about you?
Okay, so Baby Driver, I was just one of those movies that you're kind of really into. Like, I was just so, like, into it as I was watching it. You know, I was just presently into it. It wasn't one of those, like, kind of speculating always, like, oh, this is going to go this way, this is going to go this way. Because I was, like, kind of lost. Like, I was like, wait, it's doing something really different here because it's mixing it up. Because there were some elements of... a movie that, like, I could... like, there was some elements of it that was just kind of like a usual movie and how it flowed, mm-hmm. and then it would kind of mix it up, which I liked.
Yeah, yeah, I like that too.
And so it allowed me to get really into it and really care about it and kind of, like, just go with the flow of it instead of feeling like I was a viewer watching a movie. I totally felt like I was in, you know, I was immersed.
Yeah, and me so too.
I guess... I can, you know, relate with what you were saying about the whole, like, you know, like, couldn't barely stand up after it, I guess. So, yeah, so that's, like, that's what totally what stood out as a movie compared to a lot of the other movies we watch nowadays where we know that we're the viewer. But, like, this was, it did something different, which was awesome. And, I don't know if this is, no, I should probably save it for, I don't know, this is kind of the plot, I guess. About, like, with the soundtrack, but, you know, like, a lot of movies, like, find that, you know, you find that the soundtrack is kind of, like, the soundtrack is just supposed to be a background thing, you know, like, a lot of people, well, I heard that, you know, a lot of, like, amateur filmmakers think that the soundtrack needs to be something that is just almost unnoticeable because it's just supposed to go so well and, like, mm-hmm. it fit well enough.
Like every Marvel movie.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah. Well, you can't say that about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. Guardians of the Galaxy almost... I think Guardians of the Galaxy did basically what Baby Driver did. I just think Baby Driver did it better because...
No. Yeah. As I was watching it, I'm like, hey, this kind of feels like, you know, like Guardians of the Galaxy, except, you know, the music selection was all over the place a little bit more and just different. And
it was almost more a part of the plot than it even was in Guardians.
I mean, yeah, and in some sense, you know, there was like a tape from his mom or whatever, and like that was that kind of like parallel between Guardians and this movie, you know, with tapes and stuff. But
But at least the tape was of his mom, and not from his mom.
That's true. It's a bit, that's true. Bit of a difference, but
yeah, it's true.
It definitely was more reliant, I think, on the music. Well, not more reliant, but Baby Driver, the music was more involved in the plot than Guardians of the Galaxy. But that's saying something because, you know, music is involved a lot in the plot for both of them. Mm-hmm. But with Baby Driver, because of, so I guess we're going into spoilers as well, and I kind of already spoiled it with the mom thing. But, with, like, his, tinnitus, and so he had this reason, you know, there was, like, a background, like, motivation, I guess, for why you understand why he's always listening to music and stuff. It's not just this thing he does, you know?
Yeah. And it made it matter more, and, like, the scenes when he was like, wait, I need to, like, restart the song. Okay, go. Like, that sort of thing. Just, it made it, like, feel more realistic to me, and more like he actually cared about the music.
Yeah. But
I also think Guardians 2... I think Guardians 2 just sort of destroyed the music thing, because Rocket was the only one who cared about the music, and then Chris Pratt, like, could just live without it. And so, I guess...
I agree with that.
If you compare, like, all of the Guardians movies to what Baby Driver did in one movie, I think it's better.
Yeah,
because it didn't really
like,
make sense.
Like, by the second Guardians of the Galaxy, like, they were, like, by the second Guardians of the Galaxy, they were just so used to it, and it was, like, nothing all, it wasn't as special as it was in the first one, which kind of hurt the movie for me.
Exactly, yeah, it hurt it, so, yeah. Think that, there's just, yeah, sorry, there's too much to say about this movie.
Yeah, no, you can go.
I guess that's not really part of the plot, but I'll save it for later anyway, so.
Okay, all right. Yeah, the main... Oh, wait, we're not going to characters yet. Oh, darn. Okay, anyways, continuing with the plot. I liked how... I kind of felt like with a movie like that, the way that it was structured, and since I kind of didn't know where it was going to go, and, you know, so into it, I already explained that. Like, I felt like there was a chance that it could have been one of those movies that kind of went nowhere, but it didn't do that, you know. It kind of... You know, it had a great resolution. And you're right, though. The third act lasted so long. I was so, like, wondering how it was all going to go down. You know, what was going to happen. And in the by the end, like, the one dude that was married to the one girl or whatever, or not, I don't know, it was hard to follow, who died, ended up kind of being that final villain.
Yeah, which I thought unexpected.
Yeah, throughout all that, he was the one in the end that was this villain.
I know, and because, you like him at, like, the beginning of the movie.
It's true, because...
and you hate bats or whatever. Like, he was, like...
Yeah, he
did such a good job being terrifying. But...
Yeah, you have Jamie Foxx's character, right?
Yeah.
And you have... Which, you know, you're supposed to not like. And I kind of thought he was going to be the villain. Even though he kind of was, but he really wasn't by the end. He wasn't, you know, the main dude in the end that you thought would have that final, you know, event. Where it's like, oh, yes. You know, like, which is cool because it's unpredictable. And it wasn't unpredictable in a bad way. It was unpredictable in, like, yes, actually, that's really nice the way that played out.
Yeah, like, it kept psyching you out. And yeah, it was interesting. I don't like it when I can predict a movie. So I try not to.
Yeah.
And that time...
What's his name's character wasn't the villain. The leader dude.
Kevin Spacey's character?
Yeah, Kevin Spacey's character wasn't... Like, in a normal movie, almost, you kind of figured he'd be the villain.
Yeah, in a normal movie, he would be the villain. But he was more of, like, the... the what's-his-name from Guardians 2?
Yondu?
Yeah, he was more like the Yondu of this movie.
Yeah, and, like, one of my first notions, or my first, like, you know, kind of prediction was, like, oh, is he gonna be the bad guy because, you know, he bails on a mission, or the main character bails on a mission, and Kevin Spacey's character gets mad, and so it becomes one of those chase things where Kevin Spacey's sends, like, a bunch of them against him, and he has to, you know, like, but it didn't do that, which was cool,
yeah.
So, which I felt like I totally could have easily done that. So, yeah. In terms of plot, it was like the more I talk about it, the more I actually really appreciate it and like it. And so, I don't know if I could give it an 18, and I don't know why, but, like, I feel like if I ever gave it something, like, you know, perfect, I'd feel like, I don't know, like, I feel like, oh, man, I've seen everything, but I'm gonna say like 17.7 is what I'll give it. I literally know.
You and your stupid decimals. Come on.
Yeah, Edgar Wright deserves better. I'm sorry. Don't hate me. 17.7. Okay, that's what I'll give it.
That's good enough. So do you want to move on to characters?
Yes.
Well, then what do you think about characters?
Oh, hi. Well, obviously the main character was great, and the initial fact that, like, especially with his tinnitus, as we mentioned previously, how, like, it was one of the things where you had to figure it out kind of in the middle of the movie when you learned it. And you kind of, like, saw glimpses of the accident that happened or something that kind of, like, scarred him when his parents died because of it, you know. And so you kind of were left putting the pieces together until by the middle of the movie or towards the, like, maybe 75% of the way you kind of figured it all out, I guess. And so, I mean, I like that. And, like, I felt like a lot of movies would have just kind of given and just maybe, like, toward in the beginning you get the background and be like, okay, that happened. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got that. All right, you know, and it didn't do that, which was very cool. And, oh man, real quick, back to plot. Well, technically this is also character. So Lily Evans, was that the actress's name? The girlfriend girl? She had mm-hmm. that, like, she was a part of, I give her, like, a part of the B plot almost, like, B, and then it kind of collided with the main plot.
Yeah, it was cool. Like there was an A plot and a B plot, and then they, like, came together into the glorious C plot that everybody loved so much and deserves an Oscar.
And I don't know. That's I've been doing a lot of, like, research on screenwriting and, like, movie analyzing and stuff like that. And that's how a lot of screenwriters will go about writing their screenplays, and they'll have separate mini plots and. A good screenplay by the end is supposed to have them meld together really naturally and well. And this did that beyond, you know, that, I think.
Yeah, and just completely.
It did it so stinking speechless. Well. And literally throughout the whole movie, I was still asking questions. I'm like, wait, how is this going to happen? Like, why did they introduce her? And it's almost like two things are going on. Like, how is this going to work together? And, I don't know, Edgar Wright just finds a way to actually make it work in the end so well.
Really well,
and,
yeah.
I mean, and, like, I feel like the that B-plot with Lily Evans' character could have been really, like, plot that you kind of wanted to stay
Lily
away from.
Is Lily Evans Harry Potter's mom?
Oh, maybe it's Lily James.
That sounds right. But
yeah,
then,
Lily. Oh, sorry. I've been reading a lot of Harry Potter lately.
But would it be Lily James? Because those are just both names. It is Lily James, but that's funny because they're both names of Harry's parents.
Sorry. Yeah, that's proof that I have been reading Harry Potter. Okay.
I forgive
you.
So,
Lily James. Yeah. So I felt like that would be a side plot I'd kind of want to, like, could have gone, like, kind of wrong, kind of like the one that I'd want to steer clear from. In a way, like, in, you know, there's some movies where there's a side plot that I don't exactly like and kind of are just waiting till it gets to the main plot, you know, and kind of just like, all right, okay, let's pick it up, let's get back to this main plot because I'm curious what's going to happen here, you know. But that's not, you know, it wasn't this way with this movie. It was like that side plot added another layer to it, and then by the end when it all worked in together, it just it made it so much better. Yeah, like, it made me appreciate the side plot throughout the entire movie so much more. And so, anyways, going back to characters, I did like Lily James's character, and there was great, like, chemistry there, I guess. Even though I felt like it moved really fast with their whole relationship, so I didn't know, like, the time frame of that all happened, because, you know, he was at the diner, and he went there a couple times, and then they went to the laundry mat place, you know, and then, like, before you know it, things are getting kind of serious, so I don't know. Oh, and then went to dinner. And so, like, those kind of events, like, I don't know, like, the time frame that all took place in, but, no, it was still really good. And I did like the blind dude a lot. Or not the blind dude, the deaf dude. Jeez, what's wrong with
Who
me?
Who are
the,
you?
The deaf dude was great.
Yeah, he was, I think the actor, from what I understand, was actually deaf. Who played him.
Really?
Yeah, and it worked. Okay. I mean, he was
Yeah, it's
cool. Obviously very convincing as a deaf person.
And it also provided more, like, towards the whole not hearing thing and towards the whole, like, music thing, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, having it him, made you... like, have this problem and then also living with somebody who's deaf really, it made an interesting sort of twist on the music, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. And I the think fact that, you know, he more. Could play it. And the fact that he could play it really loudly, and he wouldn't exactly notice unless he felt the speaker, I guess.
Which was
cool.
And he gets to, like, listen to it through the speaker, which I thought was cool. But also, he's pretty much me, I just realized. Baby is basically me. Because, like,
okay.
I carry around an MP3 player wherever I go, and I have, like, thousands of songs in, like, different albums. And I basically play it depending on my mood. And, like, that's not a joke. Like, that's what I do. And then on top of that, like, when I'm home, I just blare vinyl all the time. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could say I do that as well. Like, on a smaller scale, of course, because I don't have that type of thing. But I can get the whole, like, kind of always making sure having music on you and playing it based on your mood, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That type of area, I could relate to that too. So,
And I do, like, I synchronize things that I do to the music as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, exactly, I bet lots of people do it, but yeah, I thought it was funny. I think the New York Times had, like, a tweet about Baby Driver, and they're like, see, millennials have their MP3s, just like the baby boomers have their vinyls or something like that. And, like, almost all of the comments were like, what about us people who have both?
That's funny.
It was so good. I wish I had several different MP3s with, like, different types of music on it. But, you know.
Yeah.
I just decided to get a really nice one that has enough storage that you can put all of the things on there. So. Anyways, I'm going to stop boring everybody with my MP3 purchases, but
I did like the... this goes into quality, kind of, but I loved how the music was synchronized with everything. It works. It just, like, made the scene so much cooler, I guess, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, in some sense, all music has to be synchronized with the scenes, but it was, like, you know, the things that were it was synchronized with, kind of like the speed or, like, the slamming of the door is right when the drum starts or the bass hits, I guess. I don't know.
Wow. So we were just so hyped about this movie, we skipped characters completely and jumped ahead to production.
I know. But I'm sorry. No,
we need to keep talking about production because I love this stuff.
Okay.
I think the sound mixing was, like, the best sound mixing of any movie.
Yeah.
Like, you hear, like, sort of, you can almost hear tension, or, I mean, you can hear tension increasing, like, when he's not listening to something and he's getting stressed out. Like, just all of the subtle things that they did in the sound mixing and sound editing and stuff like that, too. On top of just, like, having the music fit in really well, just, like, escalated the tension of the movie and just, like, I mean, piqued your interest, I guess, more. And it was so much better. Definitely so much better than Beauty and the Beast. I remember in the podcast I was slamming it for its sound mixing or something, so
Yeah, definitely.
Better than that.
Okay, yeah.
What'd you think?
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously the sound mixing had to be a huge part of the movie, and they would have to do it really well in order for, you know, it to be you could get the quality out of it, and they totally did. And they totally succeeded, which was awesome. But, like, the cool little... even, like, the little things that they did, though, with him listening to the music and conversations going on around, and, like, how other characters kind of interacted with that, they totally explored that, and just... man, it's just a masterpiece. I'm sorry, that's... yeah.
It just is.
Anyways, it really is. Like, it's so... like, it's so hard to, like, describe it in words, some things that they do, and that just goes to show how awesome it is mm-hmm. for someone to actually have created this, that I can, like, hardly describe in words of what happened, like, how well, and it was put together and all, so...
All I can say is that I need to see it again, And that I wish I was old enough to just go see our movies by myself, because I just, like, stay at the theater all day watching it over and over again.
Yeah, so we really liked it, obviously. So, anyways, we have to rate this.
No, I don't want to rate it yet. Quality. I don't...
Okay.
No. We're not even really talking about characters anymore. I'm just going to move on to production and then get back to characters, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I was realizing, as I was going through, like, you know that... all of the scenes that are sort of like flashbacks, all those like flashback scenes where it only shows like a bit of it and doesn't tell you the whole thing until later.
Yeah.
At first I thought of like, yeah, I guess that's sort of reminiscent of what they did in Batman v Superman, where they kept showing that scene. But the difference is that in that movie, they showed the full scene and then just kept going back to glimpses of it, which didn't really make any sense in that movie. But, I've been watching Edgar Wright's TV show Spaced from 1999 or whatever, and in that, they keep, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost's character keep, referencing this thing that happened when they were kids, and it keeps, like, showing a bit of it, and then it'll show, like, a bit of it, but something different happens in it, and it, like, keeps psyching you out, and you think, like, oh, this is nothing really, it's just, like, some sort of comedic joke. But then at the end of the season... they actually show the full flashback, and, like, it all makes sense what they were talking about when they said that. Like, everything that they were mentioning about that flashback that you all just thought was a joke, like, actually makes sense, and, like, they show you the full thing, and it's basically the same thing as what they did in Baby Driver. So it's, like, it's another one of Edgar Wright's really interesting things, like his really, really fast cuts. And shots and stuff like that to, you know, display a lot of information in, like, 2 seconds. And then he also has, like, really long, wide-sweeping shots. Basically, his directing is just amazing anyways.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You're right, though.
I like the little bits he includes in each story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. I described, I think, even Spider-Man Homecoming and a lot of other movies based on, like, well, with Guardians of the Galaxy 2, well, both of them as well, based on, like, whether the plot was predictable or not, on top of, like, its overall, like, whether the plot was predictable or not, or whether, and if it were, sorry, I'm having a brain fart right now, I can't think at the moment.
No, don't worry about it.
Okay, wait. The plot, whether it was predictable or whether it was actually interesting, and on top of that, whether it actually had an element to it where I was, like, still asking myself questions, and so, or whether I've seen a plot like this before. And so, with Spider-Man Homecoming or Guardians of the Galaxy, I've seen plots like that before. They just did, you know, of course, those movies had just done it really well. But this, I've never seen a plot like it before, and on top of that, it was done really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's cool to see that combination in a movie where it's just so different, but done so well that the different is good and gets you excited.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, like, whether back to, like, we're production and stuff like that, whether... I'd have to see it again to observe more, you know, like, the little shots or different, you know, things in the way they do, like, the cinematography and stuff like that. So I definitely want to see it again and, you know, talk about it more with you, but...
Yeah, for me, that's the first thing I observe when I watch a movie is generally, like, if I'm not just engrossed in the story or something like that and I'm just following the movie blankly, the first thing that I'm really paying attention to is, like, the shots and the sound and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Yeah. For me, it's literally just the plot. Like, I just only follow the plot and try to just focus on that the most.
Mm-hmm.
Then the more I watch the movie, I notice the other things like that on top of that. But, yeah. So.
Yeah.
Very cool though. So, anything else you want to say about the production though? Cause we kind
of,
they're just skipping through things.
It's just absolutely perfect, and if I could, I would give it a rating of, like, 20 out of 18. Because it's not just, like, this was a really, really good one that was done super well, or, like, this was perfect. It was like the best sort of production like that I've seen. So
okay,
just number one on my list in terms of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, if all I could right. give it a 20 out of 18, I would, but I'm gonna be nice and I'm gonna be reasonable and I'm just gonna give it an 18 out of 18. So.
So I guess for quality and slash production, I'd give it a 17.9.
Ah,
yes,
that's disgusting. You're hurting me. Okay, I guess we should talk about characters more.
Back to characters, yes. I kind of talked about Lily James's character and that she wasn't the annoying part of the movie.
Yeah, she was really good.
No, was there any annoying part of
the movie? I mean, also the fact that she was British and, like, you couldn't tell. Like, she had a really good southern accent for being British.
Oh, yeah, she's British. I totally forgot she was British.
Yeah, like, that always amazes me when people do that.
Dang.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and for that point, we should give Tom Holland credit for doing a really just amazing, just normal American accent for being British, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the little girl from Logan.
Yeah, right? And the little girl from British. Wonder Woman. Young Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
She's Scottish, and she did some whatever weird accent that was.
Yay for people who can, you know, do other accents.
Yay.
Okay. Characters, I guess, again. Lily James was good. Any other characters in particular you want
to
mention?
I wanted to talk about, Kevin... Well,
Kevin Spacey?
Well, yeah, Kevin Spacey, but also Jamie Foxx. I guess I'll start with Kevin Spacey then, but Kevin Spacey's character, I felt like just that was probably the weakest point of the movie to me. It was just his character. Yeah. And it wasn't like it was bad, it was just I wanted more from his character. And I thought he could have been much more George Clooney in Fantastic Mr. Fox. I wanted more of a... I don't know. I felt like he could have had a bit more... Like, I guess it was just the dialogue and how he delivered it didn't seem as interesting as I think they could have made him. Like, he... For all intents and purposes, he was an interesting character. I mean...
Yeah.
Like, he either... I mean, I couldn't tell if that was actually his nephew or his son, the little kid that he brings along. But, like, there's... Like, they bring up questions about him from there. He also, you know, basically picks up a baby off of the streets or something like that. Like, there's a lot of interesting things that he does for also being sort of like a, in some ways, a crime boss of sorts. And he seems pretty nice. And then at the end, you know, spoilers, he dies to, like, save baby or give him some time. So, like, he's really interesting, but, like, he never had... an interesting piece of dialogue or like a really awesome moment. Even the part when he died didn't seem that awesome to me. Like, I guess he felt like totally passable and actually pretty good, just not great like everything else, which made it stand out to me.
Yeah, so in that way you wanted more, I guess.
I wanted more from him, but yeah.
I can understand that because I agree with when he died, I was like, I feel like I could be sadder about this because, but the thing is, I didn't get enough, I think, to be truly, like, sad that he died, mm-hmm. I guess. Not, like, to really be sad, but I was like, oh, what a bummer, he was this dude that, you know, kind of helped him out, and now he's gone. But, yeah, I agree, there was more that they could have done with him, and, like, I don't know, if they did more, maybe it would, like, make me feel more okay about him just, like, helping them out, and, well, like, I could understand him helping him out, but it was like, I was in love once, here you go, let me just help you out.
It makes logical sense. It just, doesn't connect very well, and I do think it's just because he didn't have enough dialogue to get to know him, and he didn't, like, have any sort of particular mannerisms that made him stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as a complaint could go, though, literally we're just saying, like, it would be cool if there was a little bit more with him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
That's about it, I think. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is that all for his character?
I think so.
Want to move on to Jamie Foxx's.
Yeah, yeah, I want to talk about Jamie Foxx a bit. Like, he was just perfect.
Wait. I'm so sorry, but real quick, do you remember the guy from the beginning? And he was the Punisher from Daredevil?
I never watched Daredevil, but yeah.
Okay, yeah, do you remember the guy? He was in the first mission of the opening scene.
Was he slow? No.
Okay, that voice really scared me. That literally, you gave me like a shock. That was so... Okay, sorry. Anyways, yeah, the Wuzzy Slow dude.
Yeah.
Remember, right as they exited the elevator, he's like, hey, if you guys don't see me again, that probably means I'm dead, and we don't see him again. That was kind of funny.
Yeah. I didn't connect
anyways,
that.
Sorry.
But yeah, that's funny.
I just thought of that as soon as we mentioned Jamie Foxx.
So, yeah, I thought Jamie Foxx's character was just like... really, really freaky and just really well acted and totally terrified me. And
yeah.
I also thought the way that he died was just the absolute best and just the most
totally
Shaun
agree.
Of the Dead way possible. It was very beautiful to me. I loved it. Yeah, just every part, every scene that he was in was just electrified. It was just perfect. I thought he had a really, really great performance.
He was such an interesting character.
Yeah.
At least for me, like, as I was like assessing the plot and was trying to like, you know, kind of get a sense of this, the whole movie, he was just the character that was like I couldn't really grasp whether, you know, like, oh, is he so like I definitely don't like this dude. He was probably the one character for me that I couldn't just, you know, kind of put my finger on. I mean, a lot of the characters I couldn't, but probably him was the most. Because I knew I wasn't supposed to like him, and I knew that some, you know, like, it was weird, but in the best way possible.
Yeah.
With his character.
Like, I loved him because I hated him so much.
Yeah. And so for him to die the way he did and to, you know, like, his moment and his ending was just so perfect. And, like, you could say, but he just got impaled by a random, like, thing in this car crash. But it was so much more than that.
Yeah, he was
so,
just like,
wow, there was
go. And he's, like, gonna kill him. And then he just drives. Just, oh, gosh. That was the lamest way to possibly explain what happened. But it was just, I mean, it was probably actually my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, yeah, wow, okay.
That was so good.
Alrighty then.
Yeah, that's the sort of person I am. But yeah, I have to change my ringtone to Was He Slow now. So.
Oh my word. The moment you played that, I was thinking, like the moment I kind of, well, like when I heard that, I was thinking, you know, that would be such a funny ringtone. I kind of want to make it for my ringtone.
It would be so amazing.
So, okay, if we both have the same ringtone, just know I'm not copying you. I had that thought already.
Yeah, but so did I. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah, so is there anything else you wanted to go on about for Jamie Foxx?
I just wanted to say that he was really well, like, just really well acted, his character. And
yeah,
that
I
really liked. I really liked that part of the movie, so.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, he's an 18 out of 18 part.
Probably.
But that's the thing. I think I'd give the, like, acting and performances and, like, overall, like, character development satisfaction and that sort of thing, I'd give it, like, a 16 or 17 out of 18.
Yeah.
Which is low for this movie.
I'll give it
a 17 just because I felt like we needed more from Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, I'll give it a 17.3.
Hey, you're being more positive than I am, huh?
That's true. That is true. I do think I like the characters. I like the characters more than you did.
I guess so. So what would you give the overall, what would you give the movie?
Overall, I would give it a 17 point, a 17.8. Hello?
It's a bit low, don't you think?
Hello? No, that's very good. Yeah. I think that's very good.
Okay, well, I'm giving it an 18, so.
All right.
Best movie of the year so far.
I would agree with that, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It
inspired me to watch all the rest of his movies. So I've seen them all. I watched Scott Pilgrim last night. That one was really good.
Ooh, cool. I haven't seen Scott Pilgrim, nor have I seen At World's End, so.
Isn't it just The World's End? Anyways. Because World's End is a Pirates movie.
Whoa, my word. Did I seriously mix those up?
I mean, it's not very hard to mix those two up when they have pretty much the same name, just, you know, a difference of article. Of, like, an article.
That's true.
Or a preposition.
Yeah, it is just The World's End. Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Yeah, At World's End, The World's End. Jeez.
Yeah. Three flavored cornetto, right. At World's End. Yeah, that was, I think, Edgar Wright's Three Flavor Cornetto trilogy, like, despite being probably more iconic than his other movies, are, like, they're less, I guess they're not any lesser, they're just not as, they're, I don't like them as much as I like the other ones, so. Now, that's a thing.
What are the other ones that you like?
Well, I mean, I really liked Scott Pilgrim, and I really liked Baby Driver, and, you know.
Did you like those better than Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and The World's
End? I mean, I think Hot Fuzz stands out as being, like, I think his second best movie, or, like, equal to Baby Driver. But
okay.
I think The World's End, and even to some extent Shaun of the Dead, are maybe below Scott Pilgrim for me. So, yeah. Okay. If I were going to rank them from number one to, like, you know, the worst one or something like that, I guess I'd say Baby Driver / Hot Fuzz, then Scott Pilgrim, then Shaun of the Dead, and then The World's End is probably my least favorite.
Yeah, actually, I mean, even though I haven't seen Scott Pilgrim and The World's End, I'd rate it really fairly similar to how you did, with Hot Fuzz and Baby Driver being, like, at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess, Shaun of the Dead at the bottom, because I haven't seen The World's End or, yeah, Scott Pilgrim. So, yeah, that's our rankings, I guess.
Yeah, so, yeah, I like those movies, and I have so much to edit out of this podcast.
Well, that's just how it is on the Gosh Daniel podcast.
Hooray.
The podcast for you and your family.
Okay, I have to edit that out, too, because that sounds horrible. That really stinks. All right, well, we should probably do social medias.
Ooh, yeah, so I guess that's it for the Baby Driver review. And social medias... should I say something about social media?
If you want to. I mean, you're already talking, so.
I am talking, and I just don't like stopping talking. What is going on? Okay, hello. YouTube. We're on YouTube, and that's technically a social media, I guess. And
sure.
If you're not listening on YouTube already, we're YouTube, I think, / the Gosh Daniel podcast. But just search the Gosh Daniel podcast on YouTube, and you'll probably find us. On iTunes, we are also the Gosh Daniel podcast. And we are on also Stitcher, so that's cool, in case you don't have, like, an iPod or an iPhone and you don't want to download iTunes on your computer, you can listen on Stitcher.
Or you don't have YouTube Red and you're going to the mountains.
Oh, that too. And and so we are on Twitter at the Gosh Daniel Pod. Please tweet us, because we have no one that tweets us, which is sad.
We have never gotten a tweet.
We are on Patreon at, I forget this one. Can you do this one? Patreon, I always forget.
Patreon.com / Gosh Daniel.
Oh. Oh, well, now I feel stupid. Okay, whatever. It's just
so complicated.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we have two patrons, like we talked about earlier in the episode, raking in that $1.51 a month. And by that, I mean $1.51 a month. Or $1.51 a month. Wow.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. We're doing well. Thank you to Hunt the Bunt Gunter, one of our patrons, who I saw Spider-Man Homecoming with. He got me a free ticket. So, like, he paid for my ticket and everything. So, like, that's an extra sort of, you know, almost extra Patreon earnings there is a free movie. You know?
Oh, my word. Is he going to make top patron? Is he going to make top patron? Well,
he really is top patron right now.
Myron's got to step up her game.
Well, that's a problem. Speaking of Myron. She's asked us to not call her that anymore.
That sounds like she was so offended or something.
Well, she wasn't offended. She's just annoyed, I guess. So we have to give her an... So she's Noreen. We're going to refer to her as Noreen.
I thought she wanted to be called Shaniqua.
No, see, that's what you wanted to call her. And that's when she gave us this nickname. So she will be Noreen from now on.
Okay, then. Well, Noreen.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you to Noreen. And thank you to Hunt the Bunt Gunter for their very kind donations.
Patreonic support.
Yeah, patreonic support. That's the term. We have gone almost an hour and a half, making this our longest episode, which is a good way to start season two.
Premiere.
Season two premiere. Extra long, extra boring.
Yeah.
Two movies.
Extra long.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
So, I would say that Spider-Man Homecoming is you're strongly obligated to see if you at all care about Marvel movies. And Baby Driver is a must-see, even if you are a grandma who finds it difficult to get out of bed in the morning. Whatever,
okay.
Whoever you are, Baby Driver is for you.
Not specific, but okay.
Unless you're terrified of hearing the F-word, in which case I don't recommend it. There were almost 60 F-words in that movie. So...
Oh dang!
Yeah, that was a count I found was like 58 or something. So, so it's not for faint of I guess I wouldn't say the faint of heart. Really, it's not the faint of tongue.
Okay then. Also, we will probably be deciding the first listener of the month
a week.
Okay, the listener of the month, which is actually a week for the first time of season two. It's a big deal, so maybe if you tweet us,
you are the instant listener of the month for the week.
Or if you comment on YouTube, then you'll get some extra.
Get some extra points,
extra brownie points.
But like we need some more steady communication, and you need to say something interesting. And also on top of that, we need to like you. So.
Jeez. Okay, being pretty brutal here.
Please tweet us.
Don't say please three times, then you sound desperate.
No,
right?
If I say please three times,
be cool.
Then you ruined my psychology experiment there, because you know we've tried saying it multiple different times, but I'm not sure we've ever tried saying it three times. And I was thinking maybe if you say it three times, then the person will either choose to do the first thing you said or the last thing you said. But either way, the last thing or the first thing we said was please, and so then they'll feel obligated to, which was was my idea.
Fine. You're a genius.
Yeah. So please tweet us, and you will be the listener of the month for the week. And this is a big deal, okay? I mean, you get like, you know, prizes, like a shout out. That's a prize.
Whoa.
Bragging rights, that's a prize.
This is a really long episode. Come on,
a patron. That's a right that you would get. Okay, I'm done. I'm done.
Thank you so much for just end the torture.
I'm the one that's going to be editing, so it's really hard for me.
Yeah, but it's true. All right, well, have fun editing. That's going to be your consequence for making this episode so long.
Was he slow?
Oh, my word. That's, you, stupid voice scares me. Okay, goodbye. We're editing this. Fine.
Hey guys, this is Bob. I just want to ask you guys to let us know what you thought of this longer episode, what you thought of this way of recording, and, you know, what you thought of the new intro. If you want the old one, please just tell us. Yeah, thanks.
Was he slow?
No.